Oh, Nothing. Nice just the night. it does involve that us going to range
soften the plastic too much, so that you're below the cold stuff, and it's still crushing and melting. That's right, folks. I mean, if you never take a cassette, you listen to your friend anyway, but they're not respectful. Take a deep breath. Just bring an old man. He's a lot of fun. Don't be content.
Thank you.
because it hit his front body. So this leather jacket is that moves to the front body section and to the head that rear of the body.
Tiny pellets. I wonder if you could be free of charge.
time bomb. The time bomb will foul up every computer and shut down this station, but not this show.
Here's the Susie the Boozy model. This beguiling lady is shown in the kitchen mixing up a batch of fiddlers for the evening's dinner. Wonder who it is. Among a hodgepodge of ingredients, Susie the Flippy has been flying astride her broomstick for thousands of years and cooking up black magic. No exception, Aurora's Susie has hit home with a cast a spell over all who lay eyes upon her. Only $1.49.
Do you really want to spend the last day of your life with some crazy people?
Put together, model. Actually, I would find that. Burp is always calling me and saying that he dreams of days to come back and build dinosaur models with me again. I've spent hours painting them and antiquing the scale. I just dropped it. It is an incredibly therapeutic.
Okay, let's go back in time now.
No, I mean, I actually visited. I was just using that as an example.
Oh, alright.
Here's the forgotten prisoner of Castle Fair. We remember it, but.
You know, the world will be faster after the UFOs come.
That's right, too. There'll be fewer people to get in the way.
Hi, Jed.
Calling from Pixel Vision, please.
Call from Pixel in California?
That's a little pixely.
Yeah, some kind of fairy.
Well, Pixie, what can we do for you?
We're picking up on AFCF here in Fresno.
Yeah.
AFCF in Fresno.
Of course.
Yes, from the Chicago Valley.
We just wanted to call you up and say you guys really keep us going on the late shift, and we really enjoy listening to your show.
Good. And I'm glad you're processing our studio feed.
Okay, great. Well, thanks a lot, man. Keep up the great work.
Are we being broadcast over giant speakers through a big building?
Through one big building, yeah. Out in building A.
That's wonderful.
Roger, you're from Denver, Washington.
How can Pixley become this strange dark one?
If you have a word, get on us now.
And while this is following its own,
you guys give it free work?
Yes, we're doing a great work, brother. A great and notably wonderful work.
Thank you for the great work.
Thanks.
Yes, we persist in the great work, the alchemical work, the matter of transmutation, the ordering of the elements, the discovery of the philosopher's stone, the elixir of life.
It's terrible.
And the love of magnet.
You have to turn your radio on. Radio's up really, really, really loudly. Bother all your neighbors with the show. It's worth it. Anyway, if you're working at a meat processing plant, you must be thinking about the end times. But we are glad that you have your radio on, and it is fun to know that you're working there, listening to this thing.
Yeah.
march till 3 the day to see them gathered there. From Lander Groats to John O'Green with Stephanie to retread. To see a shower somewhere in the town where I was born lived a man who sailed to sea, and he told us of his life in the land of submarines.
Sounds plausible.
We all live in a yellow submarine.
Not of mine, but
yellow submarine.
Your balance is completely off. I can't hear you online. Help.
Hello, Goofy.
Sideways. Label rotary reverse. Screw yourself. Inside out. Up your torpedo. Bite my anchor.
And 88.3 KPFE in Berkeley, KFCF in Fresno, and online at dignitypapia.org.
Within a series of unauthorized samples, the show persists in slightly episodic form, scattered throughout the universe.
The smell of the candle worried me for a second there.
Oh, I had it on just for the honorable purpose of commemorating.
I just want to make sure it wasn't the wrong stuff going up.
You mean
only
like
the right stuff.
The sickly sweet aroma of LSD.
Yeah, man.
Burbling through my pipe.
I don't know what you could be talking about. Well, no, there's just a candle in the wind, or actually the wind blew it out.
Platitude. Oh,
it made a bright little light, but that's gone now.
Putations and other imputed insolence, and you call yourself a show.
Not quietly bright,
more like a tell. That's in
how far that little candle throws its beams. So shines a good deed in a naughty world.
Good lady.
Naughty, naughty.
Terrible one.
I'm eating a special cake which commemorates my beginning.
Ew.
In the Archaeozoic Age. Not the one you're thinking.
Yeah. Not the Ark.
Not the... Well, the word cake, actually...
Cacozoic period.
The Latin word for cake is a familiar word in English because it is a Latin word that comes directly from the Latin language. Such words are known as loan words. Famous ones commonly in use are things ending in O-R, anything like color, honor, vigor, that sort of thing. Those are pure and unadulterated Latin words. And so the word for cake in Latin is our word placenta. The placenta, when ejected during the process of birth, does resemble a cake in its rondure and thickness.
There it is now, as Hal said it on the air.
Happy birthday, dear placenta. Someone. Yeah, boil some more water and carry this thing.
If Bob Nelson were here, he
to
could
a
play
hippie
maybe,
family
maybe
who will eat
effects.
It.
If I were here, I would say,
in closing, unaccustomed as I am to public bathing. Oh. No, he's back.
Yeah.
That's Mr. Bob Nelson, honey.
That's
he's bound
facts.
For Dobbstown. Just for now, it wasn't time for us to...
So what's happening on the internet web? Is the show coming across the internet web? You said it's not.
Yeah, it's really weird. All I'm hearing is the background noise and the audio.
Those are carefully calculated sound effects.
No, it's completely out of balance.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's a scientifically collaborated effect.
There you go. See, that's the code guy right there. Those are the letters that spell out the yeses and noes of the show.
This is no time for automatic writing, seizures, tantrums,
and what about the ectoplasm?
Epileptic fitses?
You should do that on the show, your live show. The lights go down. At some point, you know, the question, appropriate question comes in, and lights go down, and things issue from your nose and stuff. Somebody could sneak up just to, and go, a little string.
Why should I assist in this mediumistic thing?
because it's Ask Dr. Hal, not Ask Dr. Chicken or Robert. And I know Chicken would love to help, but yeah, it'd be a funny setup.
Yes, that simply begs the question as to how I am to get an ectoplasmic extrusion.
It would have to be the sort of thing where once the question came in, well, maybe while you're listening to the question, you could secrete something with one end attached to a tiny black thread, and so nobody noticed you put it in the orifice, and then
maybe
it would slowly, you know. I'm just automatically thinking of how fun that would be.
Unless a colossal
very
sneeze.
Soft. Yeah, sure. Then the ectoplasm all comes out at once. But think of
it becomes
how fun
it'd
be with
endoplasm.
Low light, just like 100 years ago, where little low light people were sitting there, and oh my God, things are coming out of her collar hole.
But it says in the Bible not to traffic with familiar spirits.
I'm
and do not
Katie
keep
Bell
in the company of wizards, warlocks, witches, and people of ill repute. The sable-shrouded sorcerers who bear the worship to Ark of Osiris.
Wanton. Woofy.
I agree.
Wanton woofing, you say?
Yeah, wanton wolfy. It's from...
Yeah, the warp of our imagination. And
I only wish it were, but it's not. It's all too hideously real that they're making a giant multi-million dollar full-length computer animated Yogi Bear movie.
Oh, man.
Asinine.
Yes, I know. Just think what a hard-hitting documentary they could make instead.
Let's plug it. You pitch.
I think you're breaking out.
It's not time to do a plug roller yet, sweetheart.
I can't tell.
After all, we are listener-censored radio. We don't put commercials out over the air like some stations.
There, I can hear you. Oh, yeah, but you're sort of on. Uh-huh. Call back.
Hick, hike, hoke.
Get a better
wheels. Hooey,
there you
hooey,
go. See,
hooey.
I can only hear about the first.
Hunk, hunk, hunk. Ho, ha, ho.
The last part of
it's
your
the way that I'm talking.
And to continue
oh, that's
through
wonderful
the
too.
Plural. He, hi, hi. Ho, ha, ho. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's
wrong. Yeah, I get the high end. Oh, the high end is distorting.
He, hi, hi. Horum, harum, horum.
So I wonder if that has anything to do with the internet.
Us, hi, he's.
Well, you know,
he's,
real
he's, there's no ho, ho, ho. I was getting wacky there. I was going off the rails here. But never forget, your basic spells and cantrips must be said correctly, or else you're in one hell of a lot of trouble. And that's a literal usage thing.
That's like a H-E-L-apostrophe-Z.
H-E-L-L. Oh!
Oh, hey, watch it there, man.
Yeah.
That's the place to make Clayton famous.
Yeah, Satan's what? Oh.
Well, Satan's going to be at Ask Dr. Hal tonight.
Satan is real.
Bob Nelson will be at Ask Dr. Hal tonight.
He will meet you and lead you astray. Oh, man,
and he'll
Satan
be sending in questions about Vikings and abortions. And
pork, he's going what else? To ruin
yeah,
my
life.
Don't give me hemorrhoid cream breath.
And you always get it.
In the midst of life, we are in death. For death comes to one as it comes to all. The paths of glory lead but to the grave. Forgive, ye proud, the involuntary fault. Have memory to these no trophies raises. Through the long-drawn aisle and fretted vault, the pealing anthem swells the note of praise. Yes, indeed, and this sepulchre, this tomb, shall crack like an egg, Sonny. Stand back a little, you bother me. Yes, on the great day of judgment, your tomb will be the shell of an egg which will crack as your reconstituted body will spring out, reclothing its dry bones in muscles and living flesh. It is dead, a mortal body. It is raised a spiritual body, and then in a shout at the grumping of the trump or something like that, we will be seized into the air in the twinkling of an eye, racing up to the clouds for the rapture. Only, if not a subgenius, to clang painfully against the undercarriage of the giant hovering flying saucer that contains the subgeniuses on their way, the pleasure saucers of the sex goddesses. You know, if you've been listening to my series of broadcasts on the ability that everyone has within himself or herself to achieve success in sex and real estate, then you must know that I have often spoken of my mission at X Day, where I have been training carefully every time I go there for the special intercourse that will take place aboard the space vessels, prophesied with the daughters of the Elohim, the star people, the so-called sex goddesses, predicted in the Book of the Subgenius, Volume 1, and in Revelation X, the Bab Apocryphon, Volume 2. The Cyclopedia of Slack, the Bibliographon, is not a book for everyone, but hidden in its abstruse pages is a clear and concise description of just how the future life begins aboard these incredible star-spanning space vessels, the saucers of the gods, promised by the Yetinsin before the beginning of human history. Let's look a little bit closer at your stateroom, your accommodations aboard the vessel, and what type of service to these sex goddesses, as they are known, you will be required to perform as part of your shift. Shifts are based on sleep periods, which are averaged between alien and human metabolic cycles. They are not, strictly speaking, comfortable for any species, but they are democratically equivalent. And aboard the enclosed environment of a spaceship, all must have no reason for resentment of the crew who become like an extension of one's own body in that enclosed world, a coffin surrounded by inconceivable emptiness. And the glaring and leering of flashing, distorted suns and stars squeezed into glowing worms by hyper-relativistic effects. Oh, it makes you sick if you look out the window. And so you shouldn't look out the window.
Oh, all right.
Besides which, you can't even really see it. It sort of squirms in your vision, and it really is a nauseating sight. Well, I mean, they don't build it for humans now, do they?
No, it's Democrats.
Well, anyway, I think we'll stop there. And the next module of my Sex in Real Estate and Success course, I will describe what really happened on 9/11 and who was at the base of that most remarkable conspiracy. And so, this is Dr. Howland Dowell saying, Ave Atque Vale. Hail and farewell.
Have you seen that Jesus one that he's talking about?
The one with Jesus covered
in
with
Portland?
Ants?
No.
Oh, Jesus. No. Yeah, I did. I watched it. You sent it to me.
Yeah.
Most instructive. Yes, in the old country, we would do that all the time.
You catching the old people as they fell was pretty funny.
Well, except P-Lil arranged himself to fall in the other direction. I was not there, and he comes plopping down.
Right.
But one thing that I couldn't help laughing at is that it looks like I'm catching them very distastefully or something.
Yeah.
Like, ooh, I hate to touch this person, which is terrible theatricality, but very funny.
Yeah, it was great. Now, in that kind of live show, you cannot plan who's going to come from what angle and where it's
going. Well, at X-Day, I do catch the people in the pool when they are bobtized after Pastor Stang bobtizes them. Then I catch them.
That's X-Day.
Yes.
Totally different.
The old X-Day.
You know, last week when you guys went for a break and the...
And the dead air happened.
So you don't think we deserve a break, do you?
I tried to take over, but the voice wasn't working.
But what wasn't working?
Labor.
My Google voice.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, if you've got a googly voice, maybe you shouldn't
like
be
tonight.
On
it. Apparently, are you listening to us on the radio or the internet?
And one of the, remember
internet.
You said there was a capability
what's the internet
of,
feed like? Does it sounds all right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It sounds crackerjack, Sonny Jim. It sounds A1 at Lloyd's, the bee's knees. Yes, we're flaming youth, excuse our dust. Nothing could be more au courant. Nothing could lead the van more than the sensation of radio, a puzzling evidence show.
Isn't that nice? This is the church air part.
Oh, yeah.
Boy, that church air laid me low.
I saw it, dude. I was concerned because I have lain down myself when I've overindulged.
I think that's the last time I'm going to do that.
Really? Yeah, that was your coda to the church air
business?
Yeah,
I felt pretty horrific. I knew I was going to be okay, but it was, I went 1.2 for a while there, and the funniest part was like being like a child,
But you didn't feel like
everybody
you were
upstairs was talking, and I could hear the conversation and wanted to join in, but
right.
I'd sit up and go, "Wow, man!" So that was that. Yeah, you know, sometimes.
Did you have a king sized balloon of enormous size?
Yes. Well,
of course, I had one of those too.
And that's what. Okay, we'll stop the show. So
who's speaking here?
I didn't know someone was talking.
Oh, yes. Well, we have a lot of that. But what have you got for us this morning?
I was just wondering what information you guys had on, like, sorcery.
Oh, necromancers. That was, they're disinvited at the beginning of one of these tapes I just put
Well, out. I'm, no one, necromancy is not good magic.
Yeah, at the beginning of the Portland thing, you refer to that. You say, welcome all. You have a whole list of people. Welcome to wizards and blah, 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 and necromancers. Oh, not necromancers.
No, not necromancers.
Exactly. That's the joke. You say it and then take it back, and it's all very funny.
A very harmful thing.
Necromancers.
Too late. It's on YouTube.
But, you know, you could argue that it's all harmful, or you could argue that it's all meaningless.
Right.
Meaningless.
It's all just sugary donuts.
In a meaningless world. What did you want to know specifically? Did you want to know if you could do the sorcerer's work, the great work, without studying, without immersing yourself in it to such a degree that it seriously warps you as far as the rest of life is concerned? And what you might be doing that's more wholesome and valuable?
Like, I suppose.
But what's really bad is you have to do it right in order to make it work right, and if you do it wrong, the side effects can be worse than you can possibly imagine. And you'll have a huge load of guilt, too. A load of guilt for what is happening to other people that you can't control, but that you started because you didn't do your homework. So that's all to be considered.
Now we have to do the homework.
Renaissance magic, you have to do the homework. You have to do the homework with all of it. But remember the unconquerable will, the immortal hate, and courage never to submit for you. And what is it else?
Because Hal said that, now we have to do the homework.
That glory never shall his power or might extort from me. Bow and sue for grace with suppliant knee, and deify his power, who from the terror of this arm so late doubted his empire. That were low indeed. That were an ignominy and shame. Below this downfall, since by fate the strength of gods and this empyrean substance cannot fail, since through experience of this great event, in arms not worse in foresight much advanced, we may with more successful hope resolve to wage by force or guile eternal war. Irreconceivable to our
Terry did soul, have
who now triumphs
birthday.
And in the excess
but
of joy
how did she feel after
soul reigning
all that excitement?
Holds the tyranny of heaven.
Still doing homework.
Yes. Hi.
Okay, I'll scratch the questions about that. I have questions on something else.
Okay.
Ask about the mysterious collapse of World Trade Center Building 7.
There's a new, like, hip-hop artist named AC Alone.
Yes.
And his lyrics really, like, trip me out, and I was just wondering if, like, what he's saying has some truth to it.
I bet it does. Otherwise, why would it affect you? It only affects you because you're getting an insight from it, which is surprising, perhaps even a little disturbing. But there you are. It is really real.
Some things when, like, you just happen to, you know, stumble upon something that you've been trying to find for, like, really long, and then, like, a whole bunch of little things start happening that all are kind of, like, you know, like synchronicity.
Synchronicity, yes. The synchronicity is all the things happening together. And serendipity is stumbling on to the thing.
And we like to see a pattern in that. So
if you're stumbling, then it's serendipitous. But if you have gone there because you've tried to, then it's something else entirely.
What if it's like for a while there, things were like moving, you know, like, and things were changing and happening, and then it all just came to a stop and, like, just been at this, like, stagnant point.
Well, you'll start moving again. It is in the nature of a body in motion to remain in motion. And a body at rest to remain at rest.
Of ellipsoid banister mounts against the schoolhouse wall. I find that helps.
Okay.
Now, on the day of September 11th, first of all, that was chosen deliberately because it already existed as a number of alarm, fear, and dismay. 911. Call 911. 911.
What about 11?
So, it did happen, but it is commonly known that the Twin Towers fell on 9/11. Now, I hope you're following along in your books, because I'm going to spring the rest of it on here. You see, those two buildings fell just like that, see, causing a great disturbance in the force. But a third building also fell. It was WTC Building 7. It also fell. Why don't you hear about that one? It's a 47-story steel-framed skyscraper located one block from the Twin Towers, and it wasn't hit by any plane, but it collapsed at 5:20 that evening, exploding in the exact manner of a professionally engineered demolition, which means it fell suddenly straight down at near free-fall speed. That is the speed that a falling object falls, which you may remember from your high school physics, is 16 feet per second per second. This building, as it fell, landed in a compact pile of rubble, barely damaging any of the surrounding buildings. Now, there are actually collated 11 characteristics of Building 7's collapse, consistent only with controlled demolition. And the leaseholder of the three buildings, whose name was Larry Silverstein, said in 2002 on PBS that on the afternoon of 9/11, he suggested to the NYC Fire Department commander,
my hand's getting tired, put this to my ear,
that they pull World Trade Center 7. Well, I'm trying to get to the Martians, but it takes a great deal of deliberation and moving through the various steps till we get to those bone-dry monsters from another world who are causing political convulsions in the Earth today and attempting to make it more like their world of Mars. Ares forming it, as it were. Anyway, we don't need to talk about that. Now let's hop over to something else and speak about the price of widgets in Waziristan, if that is your desire. We only exist on this show to serve you. To serve you a radio ragu, piping hot and ready to slurp down.
Is it going with batteries?
Well, you have to bring a certain amount of energy to the table yourself. Now, questions? Questions?
You said a lot of stuff, I noticed.
Well, I just wanted to tell you about the conspiracy of the onions and the eels that's been cooking for so long. It's a savory smell that ascends unto heaven. Man is born unto trouble as the sparks fly upward.
Yeah.
There's,
what about
the stand from the Bible, and there's like a whole bunch of sevens. And the other day, I just realized that there's seven main types of computers. Like, you know, and that's kind of weird. There's like Compaq, Macintosh, Dell, Gateway.
That's four.
What's that other one? There's E something.
They're eerie, creepy. Oh.
I wrote them all down. I know that there's seven for sure.
But what about the number 23? Some people are buzzed and bothered by that. Yeah, you can't have the number 23. It just everything boils down to the number 23, or does it? You know, any number can be odd. And I don't just mean in the sense of an odd or an even number. So we have traipsed back again to the subject of magic, because Arabic mathematics underlies magical studies. And from the Arabics, we get our own numeral system and our system of computation, including algebra, in itself an Arabic word. Well, you cannot deny the truth of mathematics. It is a bedrock truth that has no ambiguity in it. The other sciences, as they grow from this point, become more frangible and potentially riddled with holes, gaps, inexplicable points where they twist into strange morphologies, ultimately, ideally, coming to a newer understanding. But for something which ultimately deals in the unfair rearrangement of reality, it is based on manipulation of the forces which are unquestionably the most real forces in existence. The principles of number, volume, and mathematical certainty radiant through the universe in which we are sojourners. Other universes contain other mathematical laws.
And the only dog to die in the attacks was the name Sirius. And of course,
yes, he came from the dog star millions of years ago when dogs flew spaceships and you thought he was just a little fella sitting by the doggy door.
There's a serious connection in all of this.
There is good and frightening data that the dog people have been here in the past. The cynocephalium,
I just need to know how to determine whether, like,
What is the ancient Egyptian god of death, Anubis, except
sometimes
a cynocephalia?
Like I know.
A human being with the head of a jackal or canine.
And then sometimes I feel like, well, what if I'm just, you know, way far off and I'm just thinking highly of myself and I don't want to do
Timothy
that.
Timothy Leary received the starseed.
I'm lying between, you know what I mean? Like being confident and then being overly confident in what you know what I mean?
The big danger is not being any of those things as much as it is simply being over-analytical. When you think too much about yourself, you paralyze yourself in the possibility that it otherwise might achieve. If you analyze what you do, you interfere with your ability to do it. You have to trust your intuition and your basic nature at least part of the time, and I would suggest a majority of the time.
You can't help but love the spectacle.
Hey, man, I'm going to watch some TV.
It's time for Jesus.
Jesus lost in space.
Look at him jump. Well, that's because of the low gravity.
Yeah, it was
yes,
really
he's
cool.
Come to redeem a new world.
It's sort
the
of
world
a comedic
of the
Zarklon. What if Jesus lived as an astronaut in 1968?
Well, he did, in a sense, you know, because God is everywhere. God is in us, in our germplasm and DNA. Not to mention our DVDs. Oh, yes, there is no place where God is not present. Except perhaps the strange world of Zarklon B.
Yeah.
Let's land now on the surface with Commander Jesus and have a primitive exploration of a world of mystery and terror on the new adventures of Jesus in
Space.
Well, he's not lost. He knows perfectly well.
Well, that's the whole premise. How could Jesus be lost, bro?
No, he's not lost, but he's in the lost reaches of space. He's in a place so lonely 'twas that God himself could ever scarce to be.
Albino.
Ah, sweeter than the marriage feast. 'Tis sweeter far to me to walk together to the kirk with a goodly company.
It fills my heart with joy when he comes running out of the catacombs.
Well, he was always a scrawny little troublemaking feller. In the desert with the Essenes. Yes, I... No. No, I don't. That's usually, you know, all taken care of. So I... Well, I just didn't. That's weird and terrible because it would have been the easiest thing in the world. The easiest
giant screwdriver
thing in
jack.
The world.
Yeah, I could fix the connection if I only had a little screwdriver. And for some reason... I think I do either. Up in the music.
How
stops,
about,
and then you
why don't
space.
You take a knife and use the end of a butter knife type, but upstairs in the bin.
Oh, don't stick it. Ah.
No, don't put it in the electric socket. Just use the end of a thin butter knife.
I is capable of
A butter knife capable of spanning the centuries.
There need not be butter. The butter
that could
is
be a question that they asked Dr. Helshow about the butter knife that
I
can span centuries.
There is one.
Forgive me not. What the hell are these things?
Oh, that's the butter knife.
Yeah,
put it down. Back away from the butter knife.
Yeah, watch out
centuries.
There. Don't
you
mess
could be
with things that don't
concern. You instantly back to Abraham Lincoln's time.
It's true. You could have a time warp very easily.
Can you guys assess whether or not someone's a subgenius?
How can we ask that when, of course, this is entirely between the postulant and J.R. Bob Dobbs?
It was Abraham Lincoln that giant butter knives would come spiraling from the sky to cut off.
Wow, look at that. They're gorgeous, except they come into the ground about 17 tons per square.
They come at an angle, so you can really...
Dodge.
Well, you can tell what point of the sky these butter knives came from. You know, if you find a place where the knife is penetrated to the hilt in a rather... in a harder than rather than a softer medium, then by putting thin sticks or bamboo spears into the incision, the portion of the spear that sticks out indicates the path, the trajectory of the knife. All of these should agree and point to the same point of the sky. Then we know from what angle of the cosmos our Earth was pelted with these strange objects. You know, in Midwestern tornadoes, sometimes freakish things happen, like a straw is driven through a tree or through a plank. because of the odd nature of those super high moving winds. Well, just don't get caught out in them is all I have to say. So nobody cares that this other building just somehow fell on the night of the World Trade thing, and nobody ever seemed to care about
it. Oh, man. Where have you been? There are so many people that my friends years ago would go JFK on me about Building 7 for hours.
Well, Uncle Onan sent this handy study guide. It came in his package that he sent. You know, he sent me lots of pictures of monsters and naked women and things. You know, they're like, they all look like they're cut out of monster magazines. And Onan, why don't you just send me the monster magazines? I would enjoy those. And for Philo, he sent this strange publication called Bizarrism Number 11.
Wow, Bizarrism.
Well, it's quite interesting when you open it up here. Don't sit in awkward positions and never look bored, even if you are. Be alert. And if you must chew gum, not advised, do it silently, mouth closed. This has been a public service message from the Puzzling Evidence Show. Oh my goodness, here's an article about Fred Woodworth. You know, I knew him years ago in college days, and well, I guess he's still at it. Still at his embrace of anarchism. Yep. He used to publish The Match, which was an anarchist journal.
Question that I'd love it if you guys did.
What was the story?
The story was about wax fingers, hammocks, and builders of bridges.
Wax finger, man alive. How did I ever get along with five?
They all end in snakes or addiction, and only you with your gauche aroma and your savoir faire will end up stumbling through the supermarket with an evacuated wasp nest on your head.
And Typhon, huge, ending in snaky twine. I guess I must have gone over that old material, because it seems that the notes just have this arrow saying to go back to the beginning. It seems somehow regressive.
Oh, the show?
Yeah. We've already been there.
We haven't
blood-wise and DNMG.
It's enough, it makes me sneeze with frustration.
Maybe I'll go look for a little Sharpie thing.
Is there one somewhere?
Maybe upstairs. Maybe you're right. Tiny screwdriver.
Try.
Which I usually have. Just try.
See if you can find one. Oh. Oh my. The pain. How tranquilly the olive branch observes the sky begin to blanch, without a sigh, without a prayer, with no betrayal of despair. Sometime when light obscures the tree, the zenith of its life must be past, done forever, and from thence a second history shall commence, a chronicle no longer gold of bargaining with mist and mold. And finally the broken stem, the plummeting to earth, and then an intercourse not well designed for beings of a golden kind, whose gentle green must arch above the earth's obscene, corrupting love. And still the ripe fruit and the branch observe the sky begin to blanch without a cry, without a prayer, with no betrayal of despair. Oh, courage, could you not as well select another place to dwell? Not only in that golden tree, but in the frightened heart of me. Did you find a screwdriver? Is it working? I didn't... Did you need a giant screw or a small screwdriver? I have the pocket knife with screwdriver kind of thing in it, but it's not for...
Hold on, right?
Now, Fred Woodworth's brand of anarchism is a far cry from donning a balaclava and lobbing bottles at police during a WTO protest. He has always been opposed to violence and vandalism and favors spending all his time at home writing his anarchist zine, which is still being published today.
And there it goes. I guess we're in space again.
Yes, he has the feature in the magazine Who the Police Beat,
which
chronicles violence meted out to the public by America's Finest, and another feature called The Crap Detector, in which Fred pronounces on all manner of modern idiocies. He also publishes the Mystery and Adventure Review, which is rather different from the Match. Anyway, publishing these zines is in his blood. And you can write to Fred Woodworth at P.O. Box 3012, Tucson, Arizona, 85702. You'll have to use pen and paper, though, because Fred won't have anything to do with computers. That's Fred Woodworth at P.O. Box 3012, Tucson, Arizona, 85702. Well, I might have shot off my mouth a bit in talking about the pleasure saucers of the space goddesses, but I sort of assume that many of our listeners here are conversant with the basic theological principles espoused in the Book of the Subgenius and its successors. Well, I guess not, huh? Maybe not.
I just recently started looking at stuff about... I read a lot of the articles.
Let's welcome our fathers from space. Raelians believe that all individuals have a unique frequency based on their genetic code. In the desert, they perform the transmission ceremonies. During this ceremony, which occurs four times a year, Rael, or one of his guides, places a hand on the initiate's forehead and telepathically transmits their frequency to the Elohim. But, you know, we subgeniuses don't go in for all that jive. We don't ask you to pack a suitcase and put it at the foot of your bed when you commit your ritual mass suicide. That would be a pointless waste.
Yeah, and you don't have to buy a handkerchief and put it on your face or special cast.
Absolutely not.
But, you know, I have to give that guy some props, as they say. The man, Applewhite, the guy who took those folks to their just and just funny end, just like the subgenius, I mean, just like it. Was one half of the Two. Remember the Two? They were some of the first cultages I ever met. Back in about 77, I think. And a friend of mine joined the Two. And then I caught up with him about a month later, and he was all sad because this Ivan Stang of half of the Two was a man and woman who came through here all up and down the West Coast and the nation. They didn't have any UFOs to let him ride on. He was very upset about that.
Yeah, well, it doesn't, you know, there's, you know, nothing is certain.
He was very sad. And if he just stuck it out for 30 years, he could have wound up in that house in San Diego, too. I was going across country with Bogman and Baker 18 from the Rangers of Burning Man, and we saw that comet, and we saw that at the same time there was a moon illusion where the moon goes away for a little while, and that was an amazing night of driving. Very cold out there.
Well,
at one point saw a
field, acres and acres and acres of cars that had been left untouched since 1972.
Maybe the chainsaw family had
disposed of the drivers. Junkyard that looked like it went from about the 30s to, it's in New Mexico, to the 70s. And somebody just walked away and the whole thing was rusting in place. It was amazing. And covered in snow.
Covered with ketchup, I believe.
I have to dig up those pictures, I think.
How do you know if you have, like, you know what I mean? Not magic, you know what I mean? People who have done magic. Like, how do you know if your ancestors were involved?
How do you know if you're what?
Like, I'm just curious, like, if my heritage was involved in, like, you know what I mean?
It's the hard work you put into it. It doesn't matter where you came from. Actually, although that just recently I was listening to a study about that very thing. It's sort of like you can study and study and study and study and study to be a good ball player, but the one thing that determines whether you will be or not is whether your parents were good ball players.
Whether you have the innate ability to do it. And then your destiny also must be properly aligned.
So much is involved. In motor oil than it would be for me to become something that I was not born into.
Yes, you might not be born into it, but on the other hand, it's simply a matter of a greater effort in that regard that would have to be made. You would have to move a mountain instead of a molehill. Or for a tree formerly giving fruit to bear forth frogs and lizards.
I feel that an anaconda really like
easier for an anaconda to swallow a symphonic orchestra with instruments than for a needle to pass into the kingdom of heaven.
I'd say it would be far easier for a dwarf hamster to eat the Great Wall of China than it would be for a hammerhead shark to win the Kentucky Derby.
As MC Hammerhead Shark, who not thought a likely contender to win the Kentucky Derby, could surprise everyone this year as the mystery entrance in the race.
One of my favorite guys to watch in the Jack Spratt movies. The pirate movies, the Hammerhead XO of the crew there.
Jack Spratt could eat no fat, his wife could eat no lean, and so betwixt them both, you see, they licked the platter clean.
What does it mean?
Well, it means that the guy who didn't like to eat fat ate all the lean meat, and the woman who didn't like to eat anything but fat ate all the fat. So between them both, they were able to consume the entire piece of meat. I would think that would be rather simple. You know, the thing about it is that there's no waste. Everything is consumed. It is a perfect partnership.
How many paintings and songs have been formed already in Athens and that? Is there a
painting? Paintings of gigantic spiders stinging an elephant to death. All the policemen of New York suspended in the air. Humans and beasts fleeing gigantic disembodied flaming hands. And the overall effect is oddly compelling.
Wait. So, painting was the last one, and now we're going into, like, a play?
Well, you might do that if the plastic arts really are so mutable. Oh, I better get this. Uh-huh. Yes, that was Fletcher Hanks. Hanks, H-A-N-K-S, Fletcher Hanks. Uh-huh. He was a comic book artist, born in 1887. Well, he only drew comics for 3 years, from 1939 to 1941. But in that time, he produced some of the strangest works ever issued by commercial comics publishers. His artwork is crude, almost amateurish, but the images he conjures up are quite surreal.
They do mention one of my favorite things, where the great shot of Bush trying to talk about goats to kids.
My pet goat.
In any real life situation, that prez is gone. He didn't just sit there talking to the kids. He's gone.
They made sure that was shown. It was like a setup for him to be on doing that.
And this directly leads to KPFA's problems.
It might indeed, you know.
There was nothing flexible about the way he looked at me.
Yeah.
While he was reading that poem. Book.
Are these the poems that are going to be on the Ask Dr. Hauser tonight?
What? Talking about Fletcher Hanks, the cartoonist?
Yeah, no, the poems. When you begin the show and end the show.
Oh, I need to come up with some. I need to come up with some, but I will. I'm slightly worried about it, but not fully, totally. Now, the chief heroes of Fletcher Hanks comic strips, now almost completely forgotten, are Stardust the Super Wizard, who's also called
Stardust.
The most remarkable person ever known. He's a square-jawed fellow with unfeasibly large shoulders, and Fantoma, the mystery woman of the jungle, a glamorous blonde whose face turns into a skull when she is angry. They possess various superpowers, secret rays, and are pitted against a succession of grotesque criminals.
To talk to on the show.
I can come across like
Jack Kirby.
You know what I mean?
No, I'm talking about Fletcher Hanks.
Fletcher Hanks.
And Hanks criminals are not interested in anything so mundane as kidnapping or bank robbery. They're more intent on wiping out whole civilizations. Their extravagant plots include destroying gravity so that all Earth's inhabitants float into space, setting fire to Mars, or causing Venus and Earth to crash into each other. And the treatment they receive when these plots are foiled is correspondingly cruel, even sadistic.
Yes, they drooled lava on my new pillows.
You may remember that Doc Savage, after he defeated the supervillain, would put the supervillain through Doc Savage University at his own cost to teach him to be good instead of bad, and they would ultimately graduate and contribute to society instead of being villains. But Hank's characters were the opposite of Doc Savage and would mete out fiendish, hideous, eternal punishments. When a gang of criminals was left hanging in the air with the skeletons of their victims dangling beside them, or a criminal was transformed into an enlarged head, which Stardust the Wizard carries into space and hurls at the headless headhunter, the hugest giant in the universe. The head lands on the headhunter's shoulders and is absorbed into its body, crying out as it sinks, "Help! Help!"
Well,
or a criminal is placed in a floating prison of eternal ice with Stardust declaring, "In your frozen condition, you'll live forever to think about your crimes."
Oh, well.
These violent, dreamlike, or nightmare-like tales appeared in various small circulation comic books. For years, they were only known to a small band of creepy comic book collectors.
But the best drama was The Further Adventures of TV Zeitgeist.
That was done for what was that in the old Evergreen Review or something like that?
It started out being a World War One into World War Two, where Phoebe and that guy is rescued by the Germans and then attacked by the. She was constantly being rescued, and then the rescuers were going to rape her, and then the next rescuers were going to rescue.
And then she's killed, but there's bad things keep happening to her. I hate to contradict you, but she actually dies, and the story continues with unspeakable things being done to her body. Anyway, I believe it appeared in the old Evergreen Review. And then later on, the same artists contributed to National Lampoon. But when I was speaking of Fletcher Hanks, I was talking about something which took place from 1939 to 1941. A time of foundational beginnings in comic books. It's around the time, for example, when Superman, the first superhero, was fabricated by its authors Jerome Siegel and Jerry Shuster.
Speaking of Superman, you know about the new updates on, like, the number of the beast is 616, and that it wasn't a camel going through the eye of a needle, it was a rope.
Yes, revisionists, for any number of scribbling scribes keeping these ink-stained wretches busy and their fingers pleasantly throbbing from cramps. But what other significance does it have? Remember, there is such a thing as bad originality, just as there is good unoriginality. Sometimes it is best to hew to formulae which give art and understanding their form. Those, though similar to other forms, are not stifling by being so.
Now,
but innovation
form,
which is not based in accordance
Jesus
with these, well, that is another story.
Ah, that's good to astral travel.
I'm going to say that nobody knew much about Fletcher Hanks until rather recently when an artist and writer known as Paul Karasik tracked down his son, Fletcher Hanks Jr. Even Junior is a very old guy who had distinguished himself as a pilot during World War II. The younger Hanks told Karasik that his father, who was the son of a Methodist preacher, had grown up in Oxford, Maryland, and was a violent alcoholic who physically abused his wife and sons. At one point, he threw young Fletcher Jr. down a flight of stairs, causing a head injury that left him unable to speak properly for 5 years.
Well, speaking,
once punched his wife so hard in the brisket that bones in her face were broken. Around 1930, when Fletcher Jr. was 10, his father simply abandoned his family, and they had little to do with him after that. In January 1976, Fletcher Hanks, author of The Fantoma, The Mystery Woman of the Jungle, and special Stardust Super Wizard, was found frozen to death on a park bench in New York, pickled with alcohol.
Much like Edgar Allan Poe.
Not at all.
Oh, okay.
Edgar Allan Poe was beaten up mysteriously after a political meeting in New York. Fletcher Hanks' entire comic book output is now reprinted in two beautifully produced volumes, edited by Paul Karasik and published by Fantagraphic Books of Seattle, Washington. The two books are called I Shall Destroy All the Civilized Planets and You Shall Die by Your Own Evil Creation. For Goofball Radio, this is Ralph Fielding Snell.
He does not use Smith & Wesson Club 45. He has samurai sword. He does not eat beef jerky.
What?
He eats eel jerky.
Out of body exploration. Transmission.
Tokyo.
Look at our mission is transmission.
Before Moses. And the temple of Osiris underneath his thing. I got a map.
Just listen to how much fun the callers are having on the show. You too could have such fun. All you need to do is give us a call at 848-4425 in the 510 area code and join in the clattering chatter of cacophony. That's 848-4425. 848-4425 in the 510 area code. Call now.
For the golden touch, because he was a pharaoh and a high priestess.
Back. I created you. Back.
Oops. There we go.
Boy, that was a little bit of an unexpected.
Horny daisies.
Well, ready to push up daisies.
Yes, of course.
Heads of the character, hammer through daisies. Farewell, I must be going.
Well, remember to
drive your
airplane.
Right, right.
Oh, yeah. 848-425 and 510 area code.
The elk is excellent, sir.
Yeah, he was.
Harley Engelhart, by the way, sounds a lot like Aunt Bertha.
Yes, you can really see Aunt Bertha cutting a rug on the dance floor, keeping everyone from dancing while she cuts this carpet.
Well, he chose to live in the 19th century, and they could find no law against that, so.
But
you could go 145 miles an hour in the 19th century.
How could you do that?
Absolutely.
You can't go that fast downhill. I'm sorry, you can't go any faster downhill than 60 miles an hour, even if you're falling and you can't get up.
Falling, you can go 160 miles an hour.
You could augment your speed by rockets, I suppose.
How about veto tubes?
Special ones.
Okay. Would that be fireworks? You know, Jimi Hendrix did 26 parachute jumps?
Many years.
But will there be fireworks?
In the great city of London.
Well, I know there will not be fireworks.
In the year of our Lord, 1819,
if Reverend Glitch is to be believed,
the streets of London beheld for the first time a collection of remarkable weirdos who suddenly popped up in that bustling metropolis.
Exact distinction. See, the comparable is you have to have an X and two.
I have an aunt who died not long ago.
For example, in the London of 1818, there was just one of these weirdos was known as
poor woman left the world without a will, and
the Pig Pie Man. Now, the Pig Pie Man was a blind, one-legged pie seller known in London for his cry of a long-tailed pig or a short-tailed pig. And for an artificial leg, he used a small boy.
I'm going to respond with a half-baked or full-boiled.
Then there was Tiddy Doll. Tiddy Doll wore a cocked hat with gold lace and a feather and sold gingerbread. And, of course, he was known because of his name. His cry was Tiddy Doll, lol, lol.
Oh.
A singular strange fellow was Old Boots. Old Boots was formed by nature with a nose and chin so tenderly endearing that they used to embrace each other, so much so that he could hold a piece of money between them like a huge, grotesque pair of forceps or nippers.
Nah, he's a drug type.
And then the provisional plexiglass would step forth with new recipes for meringue souffle.
Barbara Orsilian was a German girl who had a flowing beard and played
the
harpsichord.
She used to tear down the pyramids and let the whales dine on the mummies of kings.
And Buckhorse, whose possible real name was John Smith, was known for his ugliness, his skill at boxing, and his ability to punch his chin and so produce a variety of popular tunes.
Boxed his ears, I'd say.
And send them to Tierra del Fuego by parcel post.
Well, that's when only
the guy with the new sound
ventured the meat on your scalp.
How about that?
Mulled Sack, a.k.a. Jack Coddington, was a notorious drunkard and thief who had a team of young pickpockets and once, when drunk, married a woman who turned out to be a well-known hermaphrodite.
Oh, is notorious worse than nefarious?
Martin Van Butchel was a celebrated surgeon who specialized in treating piles and fistulas. When his wife died, he had her embalmed and kept her at home, inviting friends and relatives to visit her.
That's the guy.
Like, the Twilight Zone with the wax museum in the basement.
An ordinary wax museum containing figures of dream and nightmare. And
Martin Bassam bought the air conditioner
is
for
there
the dummies,
something more
but didn't buy it for the
in
light.
These wax dummies, so eloquent yet inexpressive. This painting, Midnight at the Wax Museum, is the basis of our story of small but true mysteries. Well, okay. All right. And if you're satisfied with that, we can be sure about the return of Jesus Christ, King, in 2018, according to Acts chapter 1, verse 11, Acts chapter 3, verses 19 and 21, and, of course, the book of Micah, chapter 4, the entire chapter. Prophecies are a double-edged sword for religious leaders, and nothing focuses the mind of a believer more than a definite date for the end of the world. The second coming of Christ, an outbreak of war, or some other momentous event has often been used to stimulate the millennially based hardwiring in man's ever-expanding, gasping thirst to believe in anything which might lift him from the mire of his predicament. This well-known human foible was exploited by the wily, insidious Dr. Ivan Stang in the early days of the Church of the Subgenius, when he set the arbitrary seeming date of July 5th, 1998 for the iconoclasm, or rupture, which was to carry the penitent Subgeniuses skyward in the spinning, whirling silver saucers of the space goddesses, daughters of the Elohim. To be effective, though, the date set for any day of future doom must not be so far into the future that the majority of the prophet's followers will die before they see it. But, of course, there is the problem that once the date arrives and the prophesied event fails to happen, that prophet must do some extremely fast talking or else be stripped naked, tarred and feathered, and thrown in the pond with the frogs.
As happened to Ivan Stang.
Yes, as happened to Ivan Stang. But in 1830, that was also the fate of William Miller, the Baptist preacher who founded the Millerite movement. Miller's biblical studies led him to believe that Christ would return in 1843. When that year passed without event, well, the public was somewhat sore, and they pursued him to his own church door. A rapid recalculation showed that it would be 1844 when the Prince of Peace once more returned to Earth. While he would not commit to a specific day, the Millerites became fixated on the 22nd of October. Many abandoned their homes and jobs as the day approached. The morning of 23 October brought the great disappointment. The Millerite movement, which had at its height over 100,000 members, disintegrated. But a few came up with another excuse, an alternative explanation, and remained faithful. They went on to become a modern group known as the Seventh-day Adventists. Oh, it's not surprising that the history of cults and alternative religious movements is littered with failed prophecies. But perhaps no other cult has risen and fallen so dramatically and amusingly on a failed prophecy as the UFO cult known as the Church of the Subgenius. The Church of the Subgenius had its origins in a loosely organized group called the Association for Research on Soul Light, which began in Taiwan in the 1950s. Its members, mainly academics and professionals, were chiefly concerned with measuring and increasing their soul light or spiritual light energy using meditation and other techniques. Ivan Stang, an associate professor at a pharmaceutical college, joined the group in 1992. Born in Chiayi, Taiwan, in 1955, Stang was an atheist in his youth, but had been perplexed by recurring visions of golden balls of light, whirling flying saucers, and most of all, the enigmatic face of a pipe-smoking man. Stang ultimately came to believe that he was receiving messages from a being he called J.R. Bob Dobbs, and will continue this lesson in our next thrilling episode, The Human Pendulum, or Victims of the Bat. See you next time.
Oh, yeah, it was in there. Nah,
it was.
That ought to hold a little, folks. Yeah, you can never tell what's in the mix.
Oh, no, he did an Uncle Don. He did a Lonesome Roads.
Yeah, listen back to the homework part of the show.
Oh, no, don't do that.
It's already been done.
Well, I'll be
countdown
sweeter.
One of the last few shows of the year.
And what did it sound like, in your opinion, this Let's Listen thing?
It's like any of those old instruction tapes.
Highly instructive.
Nice people happily yakking about, he has a drum, boom, 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 words with an M in it.
If I give you this, would you give it to Philo, or is he? Am I likely to see him around the same time that you are?
Probably, yeah, next week.
All right, I'll just keep it.
Might as well soak it up, all the info that's available.
Absolutely. You saw how easily it was to employ it in the subject, in the service of good. Well, I guess I've got a little tidying up to do. Before the train runs by, I should clean up the blood and damage in here. And I'll be right back. This.
Of the show. So wonderful, the show. And we dance and dance and dance and dance and dance like a little sunken ship out in the ocean.
Who knows? Who cares? Who wears the pairs of dead man's pants that dance
radio
in the dark
water.
The sun? And radio sharks are snapping at the boat.
Now that you bring them up, there they are.
Yeah, well, they came up from the depths of the ocean. Also, with Kraken is lurking down there. Huge whale sharks, unnumbered and enormous polypi. Minnow with giant arms, the slumbering green.
Yeah, that's the one. I'm gonna
flying fish. And the dawn comes up like thunder, outer China across the bay. all here. Also the humble kestrel and the seagull. Its lonely cry, like the skua and the albatross, echo over the oceanic reaches. The reaches of the marshes and the wave marshalling. Yeah. So,
like you've been underwater for the whole time.
You read about the two Filipino kids. You didn't?
No.
They were in a lifeboat. They drifted for 800 miles. They were out for 50 days. They ate a bird that they got to land and some flying fish.
I think 47 days was the last record or something.
Oh, yeah, well, they must have broken it because it was 50 days.
I'm not
days.
Sure about that, but yeah, that's pretty amazing. The things you can do when you're young.
Yes.
Like stay at sea for all that time. I remember almost doing that once or thinking like I was almost.
They drank water out of the bottom of the boat it rained
when
in
it
their
condensed.
Boat. Then
okay.
they, but they were drinking seawater by the time they were picked up. And they, fortunately, for their small boat jaunt, as they thought it was, they brought a bunch of coconuts, which they were able to consume for a while. But now, pretty soon, coconuts don't taste good no more, and you run out of them. Hard to get in there, too.
Not on the show.
Well,
I never run out of anything on the show.
No, all you need to do is say it. That's the way radio is. And we are aware of that. So, you know, the old Ask Dr. Hal show will be a radio thing also.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Standing some distance out because I think it's got good placement on the antenna.
So long as the transmitter actually operates.
Ah, is it
back? It sometimes goes in and out. It fades in and it fades out.
Yep, I know. I've seen it happen with my ears.
Well, it's sad.
Okay, go ahead and say
sad,
it.
I tell you.
Just a couple of seconds.
You don't run out of anything on the show, but you do. You run out of time.
That's well, it. We often run out of time,
actually,
but so does everyone else.
The show continues in our... It just continues all the time. You only hear a couple hours of it, but we're always like this.
Well, I want to listen more.
Please do. Please
you
listen.
Come over to the live Dr. Hal show.
Yes, you could come to see my nightclub show, or you can listen to podcasts of this show. Odd podcast. That would make you say odds bodkins. What a show. Yes. Finishing the hat. Whiter shades of pale. Understanding.
You guys know my name yet?
Your name?
I call every week.
Your name. Carburete. No, that's an interesting name. I must say goodnight.